This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
NVIDIA speeds up its GPUs.
Adoption might be speeding up too.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for May 20th, 2011. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined once again by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael. How are we doing today?
We're doing well. We're doing well. A lot of news this week around the GPU arena, which we're going to talk about in just a moment. But
GPUs keep exploding all over the place here.
Yeah, there's a lot of news, NVIDIA and AMD, and some of the people surrounding that ecosystem. So let's get right to it. I mean, NVIDIA made the big news earlier in the week. They actually announced their new version of their Tesla part, their modular Tesla part, the M2090.
Right. This was a speed up from the previous chip.
Right. And it's still the Fermi GPU. It's basically the same architecture. They've just added more cores. They up the clock speed on the processor, up the clock speed on the memory as well. So they went from like 515 gigaflops per chip to up to 665 per chip. That's double precision. And the memory bandwidth increased by a good margin too, from like 150 to 178. And that's basically, now they're up to 512 cores, which is sort of what Fermi was spec to do at maximum. And now they've achieved that. I mean, the sort of the interesting thing to me is it's like a 30% bump, and you know they didn't, you know, go through a process technology shrink. They didn't have a new architecture. It's just they basically added more cores and up the clocks. That's a nice 30% bump for basically an upgrade.
Yeah, right. I mean, this is, you know, it's funny. We're so used to being in the x86 mode and Intel with their tick-tock and, you know, they get a new architecture and then a shrink, then a new architecture, then a shrink. And it feels like NVIDIA starting to get into a pattern like that with upgrades to essentially existing architectures. So in this case, what we're doing is we're adding more cores onto it.
Right, and usually you don't see that in the CPU world until you go to a new architecture or a new, at least a new product family line or something like that. You go from like an EX to an EP line on Intel or something like that. Or if you want to go to a shrink, that's a new processor family. But here they're sort of doing it inside the same architecture.
Right. Now this is going to hold us over until Kepler comes out eventually, right?
Yeah, it sounds like it. I mean, theoretically, they could do another kicker on this, depending upon when Kepler's going to be out. And I have a feeling, you know, the actual production chips won't come out until 2012. But
yeah, I wonder if we might see some news around them around the supercomputing time frame this year. But remember, NVIDIA also rescheduled its GPU technology conference to the spring of 2012. It could be that those are the real glorious launch events where they're showing results from Kepler.
Yeah, they might. I'm almost sure they're going to talk about it this year. And supercomputing would be a good time to talk about Kepler. I mean, they basically said in their roadmap they're going to be introducing it, not necessarily producing it, but introducing it in 2011. I think we'll keep with that. But the production chips probably won't come out until, you know, early 2012 at best. So this one, the M2090, will probably be the last Fermi upgrade. In fact, it's really the first one in a sense. I mean, it's the first time they've actually increased the core count. It was at 448 when they introduced it. Now it's up to 512. So this will probably be the first and last upgrade, pending some other event that I don't think we can foresee.
Right.
So this is pretty good news for all the OEMs that are sort of that are on the GPU bandwagon. So they came out and they basically said, you know, we're going to support these things. We had a
bunch of vendor announcements saying that they've got products with the new GPUs, the 2090s.
Right. So I think they'll all eventually pick them up, and so everybody will move up probably before the end of the year.
And AMD had a product announcement also.
Right. They had, there was a GPU product announcement on the server side, which they haven't done in a while. Usually it's their Firestream stuff on the GPU computing side on the servers. But this time it was a FirePro chip, which is their workstation graphics chip, for servers. So it was the FirePro V7800P. And what they're going to do with it is they're aiming it for servers that want to do both compute and visualization. So things that are being server farms for graphics and other visualization for clients, and also can do compute as well. It's basically a combo chip that they've enabled.
Right. I like this combined use case in theory where you can do a visualization and computation for graphics servers and for compute servers. Especially I like it at the low end where you have dual purpose machines, potentially on the desktop. That's a form factor I've talked about a lot. But even going up through some of these entry level graphics clusters, I think it helps to have GPUs and go both ways.
Right, and it's like you said, for the workstation, it's sort of established because, you know, you've got the user right there, so he can go both ways. But for servers, it's a little different. That market is not mature or even, I mean, it's just emerging now. Being able to serve high-end graphics and visualization on the server side to clients, Microsoft came out with Remote FX recently to do virtual desktop, and that's sort of one of the major applications these things are aimed at. Basically being able to feed virtual desktops to Windows clients on thin client sides much more efficiently than if you had to outfit each client with a high-end GPU. So, but that's a new market, so nobody really knows how that's going to pan out, but it's kind of nice. It's very interesting to have that capability on a GPU chip on a server that can do compute as well. It gives the guys in the data center some leeway on how they want to treat those resources. They can do HPC codes, they can do virtualization for users on the network, and certainly get a double use out of those.
Right, and this is something we were talking about, that it's not that simple that GPUs can just be reused that way. There is a little bit of a trick in the firmware that needs to be done, because the ones that are going out the door, like Teslas, that are just for compute, those aren't optimized for graphics performance. It's the same core, but there's right. a difference in how they're set up, right?
Right. The drivers are a little different. They're going to use that hardware a little differently or probably a lot differently to do graphics and visualization that they would use to do, you know, straight up floating point calculations and vector arithmetic. So, yeah, the firmware is different, so it gets used differently. And typically, AMD and NVIDIA ship those separately. So there's a Quadro line and then the Tesla line on NVIDIA, and then there's a FirePro line, a FireStream line. Or there's actually multiple lines on the AMD side. But here they've basically combined those. And in fact, NVIDIA has the same type of product in their M2070Q, which basically the Q is the Quadro. It also does compute and visualization. Right. That's been they introduced that last year. And this is what this FirePro chip is going to go up against. It's something on the server side that does both application sets. So there's a little bit of a battle going on there. It'll be interesting to see how that develops, because, again, it's a new thing. I mean, the dual use is new. The graphics being driven on the server side is new. So we'll see what kind of market share that's able to capture.
Yeah, and, you know, that gets to the point, is what kind of market share is it going to capture? You know, we see the GPU vendors making them, the system providers are integrating them, and the big question is to what level they're going to be adopted. Now, NVIDIA said that they did $100 million in Tesla revenue last year, which would imply about 7% of HPC capacity being GPU accelerated, plus or minus a little bit, depending on how you build the model. And that was consistent with our user surveys for that time frame. But we're continuing to survey this, both as part of our site census and as part of a special survey that's actually closing today. And I've taken a preliminary look at those results. And, we haven't cleaned the data yet or anything, but it looks like the GPU adoption is really continuing to grow.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, the vendors obviously have caught on to this. There must be demand out there. I mean, every HPC vendor has a GPU offering now.
So you're putting them together for some reason.
Yeah, they're doing that. They're not doing it out of the goodness of their hearts to move innovation along. So there must be that demand out there, and it does sound like it should be moving into production systems. Now, you do hear different things about this. I mean, in the wider sense of the enterprise, there's not a lot of GPUs, but certainly in our neck of the woods in HPC, it does look like there's quite a bit of excitement. I'd be interested to see really the hard numbers. I mean, you talked about the $100 million in NVIDIA sales for the Tesla parts. That's a lot of chips. That's like tens of thousands of chips. Yep. So that's a good sign.
Well, we have hard data now from hundreds of users on what percent of their workflow is currently using any form of accelerator, what type of accelerator that is, what's the average number of accelerators that they're using for a run, and what applications they're running them on, what are the primary applications for the accelerators, and then how they think that'll look in 2 years, the same set of questions. So we've got a really good idea about current and future adoption of GPU right now. It's going right into all of our models.
Right, and I think, you know, that adoption rate will certainly be influenced by how well the software picks up on this. I mean, we've seen a lot of activity on the CUDA side. Certainly, AMD is pushing the OpenCL model, so we're going to start to see some of that too. But I think with the latest announcement by NVIDIA with the new Tesla, we saw new Amber, which is a molecular dynamics software package. New Amber results, they did even better. With the upgraded chip, doesn't sound impressive, 69 centiseconds of simulation per day, but that's a record.
It's certainly interesting to track how the use of GPUs is moving beyond just in-house applications into open source and even some ISV applications, because that's a big step it has to get over to make it adoptable for a higher percentage of HPC workflows. Of course, it starts with in-house and starts to spread there, and it really still reminds me very much of the initial spread of clusters, which went through a lot of the same thing in the mid to late 90s. Where it started with the big research labs who had their own codes trying to figure out how to efficiently write an application for this. GPUs are going through largely the same thing.
Right, and I think you're going to see that in parallel with in the commercial side of HPC, which rely to a greater extent on commercial ISV codes. And we saw this week Simulia came out with a new Abacus release that now supports GPUs. They're at their FEA suite. So if you keep seeing that, that'll help certainly the commercial side of HPC and then just the software ecosystem in general. So
yeah, you get enough momentum where the ISVs feel compelled to respond, and then the ISV application availability enables more end user adoption, and it becomes a self-perpetuating cycle. We were saying back at Supercomputing that it was starting to look like we were crossing that tipping point of adoption where GPUs could really start to become a dominant architecture going forward, and we're in the very early phases of that. We still have to see exactly how that's going to happen. There's a lot of programming issues that have to get addressed. Furthermore, it's not clear that this notion of a PCI-attached separate GPU is really what this is going to look like. And we were saying, Michael, you and I, back in the original Larrabee timeframe, that Larrabee versus the Tesla follow-ons, which are proving out to be this Project Denver stuff, could be, you know, the real war that starts getting waged in 2012, where it doesn't look like a separate attached GPU as much as it looks like some form of a coprocessor.
Right. Well, in 2012, I think we're going to see the first Kepler chips launch, and those will still be PCI chips, just like the thing Intel's producing, the Mic processor. So those should go head to head on a pretty even basis. Now, if you talk about Project Denver, those are the.
I was talking more about a 5-year time frame, how it eventually gets adopted.
Right, 5 years out. I mean, we're going to see heterogeneous GPU CPUs, I think, from everybody, and certainly NVIDIA's announced that in Project Denver, as you were alluding to, and then AMD's been on this for a while with their Fusion architecture, and they're going to move into the server side with those. They're just on the client side, essentially now, and then whatever Intel does with their Mic technology, they might end up, although they haven't put this on the roadmap, they might end up integrating their Mic architecture into their standard CPU architecture as well, I think they would have to if they wanted to sort of compete on a more even basis with what AMD and NVIDIA are envisioning here. So
you remember there was a point in time when floating point units were separate. Chips, separate cores, right? And then eventually it was a coprocessor that got integrated. And, you know, if it's a good idea, ultimately it gets integrated at the chip level. Now we're seeing two different potential architectures for that. If you really try to crystal ball that, one is an x86 colored future and the other is looking something more like an ARM. In any case, what we're seeing is continued adoption of GPU at the present, which is the real driver for looking at how are those architectures going to look 5 years from now.
Right. And in 5 years, like we were saying, I don't think these things are going to look much like GPUs anymore. In fact, I'm not even sure there'll be discrete GPUs in 5 years.
Right.
Maybe a little further out than that. But yeah, these things are melding together and they are starting to look like, follow that floating point coprocessor, history. And I think that's how it's going to happen. Now, how it's going to play out across all these architectures and vendors, it's hard to say. I mean, there's a lot more complexity in the processor ecosystem than there was back in the days of floating point processors. But it certainly should be interesting. In 5 years, we're going to have very different architectures and HPC processors, I think.
Yeah, well, that's what we're looking at. We're going to be certainly tracking the adoption now, not only how many people are using them, but how many they're using, what applications they're using them for, and where they expect to be going in the next 2 years. That's all going to be pretty good data for our clients.
Well, I'll be interested to see all that data because, yeah, it's something obviously we're following quite a bit, and it's sort of a little crystal ballish from my side. You know, everybody, of course, all the vendors talk up their own products, and the enthusiastic users are the ones that we hear about, but it's hard to get really the quantitative data that you guys are doing. So I'll be looking forward to those numbers.
Well, and thanks to all of the HPC Wires readers out there who answered our survey. We appreciate it.
Very good. Well, I think that'll wrap up the news for this week. There's actually plenty that we missed, but we're going to keep at it next week. And I think the news is, like we said, it's picking up as we run up to ISC in a few weeks. And
definitely.
I think that's going to keep going. So until next week, Addison.
All right.
See you
thanks.
Then.
Thanks a lot, Michael. Talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.